Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back, everybody, to Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 138, and this week, first of all, I'm happy to be back on the air at all after a, if you follow me on Twitter, you probably know I probably had the coronavirus. I don't know that for sure because, I'm here in New York where it's very difficult to get tested at the moment. But based on the telemedicine appointment I had with my doctor, she said it was very likely I had it, just based on my symptoms. So, and if I'd be pretty shocked if I hadn't had it. I don't know how to say it. But based on just it was like the worst fucking flu, I think I've ever felt in my entire life. So. If you're listening to this and you're lucky enough to not have had it so far, definitely stay indoors and you do not want to get it. That's all I'm going to say. It was one of the worst, 11 days I've ever been through. But I'm feeling a lot better now, so able to get on and record here after, 11 days of hell. My guest, he was originally supposed to be my guest last week, but... as of last weekend, I was not in any condition to record a podcast, but TJ has gracefully agreed to come on a week late. So, hi, TJ.
Hey, John. Glad you're feeling better. I know that sounds awful. I'm sorry you had to go through all that.
Yeah, I had a less common symptoms, I guess. When I was talking, I talked to my doctor about it. It was but still symptoms that apparently a significant percentage have, but I think the more famous coronavirus symptoms are the dry cough and the trouble breathing. I had a little bit of a cough, really not that bad, and the trouble breathing I only think I had maybe one evening, which really did freak out my girlfriend. We almost called an ambulance, but the main symptom I had was gastro, intestinal, I guess they call it, really, really terrible stomach pain, which apparently does happen to a significant percentage, even though it's not as well known as the as like the dry cough and all that. But yeah, like it felt like for a few days, it felt like someone was like stabbing me in the stomach. Like that's really not an exaggeration. It just felt like, you know, like a constant stabbing pain. And then like the nausea was like the worst nausea I've ever had. That they ended up prescribing me something for the nausea, which actually helped a lot. But yeah, I mean, it was basically from like, I guess like I started feeling a little under the weather, like Saturday, not this past Saturday. What am I thinking of? Like Saturday the 28th, I guess. Or maybe it was the 21st. I don't know. Time is kind of has no meaning after a while when you're, you know, feeling this sick. But like by the time we got to that, like Wednesday, Thursday, like the 25th and 26th is when it started really, really feeling sick. And then, you know, that those few days were like the absolute worst. And then by this past Monday, I would say I started feeling better. And then by, you know, like the first and second, you know, I still wouldn't even say I'm 100%. I still feel like I have very little, like a lack of energy compared to before I was sick. But I just assume, you know, that'll take a while to get to you feel like, you know, you did before you were sick. But at least the symptoms and the fever, obviously I had the fever, and the fever was like really, you know, would go up and down constantly. And like, you know, it got to around 102 and just like, you know, would plummet and then go right back up. But I haven't had the fever in like 5 or 6 days now. So that's probably an important one, I guess. And my stomach's been fine, but it's just like a general, I guess, lack of energy. But, you know,
hopefully for a while. Yes, I hopefully people hear this and understand to take this shit seriously and stay at home. I think I've left the house like twice just for groceries. That's it.
That's the same thing I did too. I left the house like people. I don't want people to think I was out fucking partying and got it. Like my job let us start working from home. I probably left the house twice just for groceries and somehow I still got it. So, you know, I don't know. I guess it's just that widespread here in New York.
Yeah, you just got to be careful, period. And sometimes you're just unlucky, I guess.
Yeah. And weirdly, like my girlfriend who, you know, obviously lives with me and her mom have not got it yet. So I don't know if maybe they were the original carriers and they were lucky enough to be some of these asymptomatic people. But yeah, I don't know. But it's been a rough couple of weeks, but I'm happy to be back on the air here and, you know, talk about what little Japanese wrestling there is.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least you got sick when there was like nothing happening, really.
I watched the Noah show like while sick. So that was like the first night I was starting a little better. So I watched that Noah show live, which probably wasn't the greatest decision because then I started feeling like kind of crappy again the next day on Sunday. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess. And we're all kind of going through this at this point, you know. I don't know. It's been a rough, like I said, couple of weeks, but you know, things are not been great in Japan or the US at the moment. Like Japan, I know there's been a big spike of cases in Tokyo, and you know, just when I think as we kind of predicted the last time I was on the air a couple of weeks ago, like when they had kind of started running some shows in front of fans, like DDT Judgment, I know, was in front of fans, and you know, Big Japan, which never had really stopped, I guess, ran their March 21st Korakuen that we're going to talk about in front of fans. But, you know, that it kind of got shut down again. So now it's like even Korakuen Hall won't let anyone run anything in front of fans. And it seems like, you know, we're back to nothing but no fan shows. I would say, I mean, if you're looking for like an end date for this, I would tell you right now, I don't think it's going to be in April. I think all you're going to get is no fan shows through all of April, maybe even through all of May.
So. Yeah, I think May is like the best case scenario. I don't know if you saw, it was like just reported like right before we got on that Ota Ward basically canceled throughout May. So there's going to be no Stardom Ota Ward show, for example, probably.
Yeah. So I think people are, you know, I know like the MPV, the Nippon Professional Baseball League, they're aiming now for late May, and they don't even really have an exact date. So I would assume that's the earliest you might see some stuff come, but it really depends on if they get things under control in, you know, in Tokyo and, you know, during the rest of April, because right now it's like spiking. But yeah, I don't know. It's really rough around the entire world right now, and it's very depressing to think about. So shouldn't really, I'm not going to try to like steer it toward wrestling, I guess. But I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just people say, oh, well, at least we get these no fan shows. But like, to me, they're not, those are not good like escapes. Like, they just remind me of how awful everything is right now. It's like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it depends on the promotion too. Like, I think DET and Tokyo Joshi, they kind of made, like, got in on the joke a little bit, not on the joke, but like made it a point to make, like, try to like do spots and shit like that to make it not seem as weird that there were no fans. But then you had like Noah and like other promotions that kind of just pretend there's fans there anyway, for the most part. Like, they're trying to go business as usual, but just with no fans. Like, I like how Dragon Gate did it with their one show, like 22nd, I think, where they basically just had the wrestlers out there and they were basically pretending to be fans.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's right and wrong ways to do it, I guess, but like, I'm not, I didn't watch WrestleMania last night. I just didn't really have the energy to care. And it's just been a, I don't know. It's not a good escape to me. It's just like, well, this is the world we're in, and it's just kind of a depressing reminder that it's not going to end anytime soon.
Yeah, I get that.
Hey, before we get into our first topic, if you were to guess on average how many days people in the U.S. have to wait to see a doctor, what would you say? Americans have to wait around 29 days to see a doctor in major U.S. cities. If you're dealing with a condition like erectile dysfunction, you want treatment ASAP. That's why our friends at Roman have spent years building a digital platform that can connect you with a doctor licensed in your state, all from the comfort of your home. Roman makes it convenient to get the treatment you need on your schedule. Just grab your phone or computer, complete a free online visit, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. If the doctor decides the treatment is right for you, Roman's pharmacy can ship your medication to you with free two-day shipping. You also get free unlimited follow-ups from your doctor with your doctor anytime you have questions or want to adjust your treatment plan. With Roman, there are no commitments and you can cancel anytime. So if you're struggling with ED, go to GetRoman.com/VOW for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/VOW for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. GetRoman.com/VOW.
I want to talk about the end of Wrestle 1, since, of course, you know, you were such a big fan of the promotion. You know, the company came to an end after the April 1st Korakuen, which, you know, unfortunately had to be a empty arena show due to the coronavirus pandemic. Do you have any thoughts, I guess, on how Wrestle 1 came to an end? And, like, was it, you know, I mean, I think there were a lot of obvious jokes based on the lack of fans there, but to me, this came across as very tacky. It's like the promotion's coming to, like, you know, it's dying. I mean, you don't really gotta shovel dirt on it, you know. But I don't know. The entire thing's a very unfortunate situation, and I think I guess, what are your thoughts after, you know, following the promotion for so long, watching it come to an end the way it did?
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing. Like, I think the show they had scheduled would have done really well in front of fans, because especially like the end of it, like the last match was like a battle royale with basically people throughout the company's history coming back, like Ikemen returned, and I guess Fumi Nakanoe, Hama, all them kind of people.
Yamato was there.
Yeah, and it's Yamato. So it was. I'm glad they did that, but obviously it would have been better with fans involved. I was kind of happy they showed some of it on Twitter, like little 1 minute clips from each video or each match. So that was nice, but yeah, it's really disappointing they couldn't do their last show with fans. Like, it would have been nice if they could have just postponed ending it and ran a show without fans, like, once all this is clear. But since the main reason they're shutting down is money issues, I guess that makes sense why they can't just postpone it.
Yeah. Did Muto get booed a lot at the second last show at, like, Or did he work that Shinkiba show? I don't even remember.
No, he didn't work the Shinkiba show.
He got booed at Ode Award, right?
Yeah, he got booed at Ode Award. Like, this one Japanese fan I follow on Twitter, he was actually at the show, and like he was one of the people booing and had a video of it. And it was pretty funny. Like, from the sound of it, doesn't seem like the hardcore like Wrestle One fans in Japan aren't really happy with Muto, and he's not exactly helping the situation because there's been like interviews of him in like newspapers and stuff, basically talking shit on the company. Like, you know, he had his knee surgeries last year or 2018, I think, and like he just returned last year, and Wrestle One wasn't booking him except for big shows, and apparently he said, like he was saying, like the reason he hasn't been working Wrestle One since he returned from his knee surgery was because they weren't booking him. That's why he's had to go to like Noah and All Japan since he's been back.
Hmm. So do you know like why, like if you had to try to guess at what the reason for that kind of reaction was, what do you think the real reason was? Do people resent him starting that Masters thing?
That could be a reason. I just think fans were kind of just disappointed that the promotion was ending and Muto doesn't seem to care and barely put any effort into it, especially near the end with running shows like the Master shows, which actually drew fans and like Wrestle One.
Yeah. So I guess to give Wrestle One a bit of a eulogy, if you had to tell somebody who, you know, didn't know anything about Wrestle One and had never watched it, didn't really care, how would you explain like the history of Wrestle One? Like what made the promotion important and what made the promotion worth following throughout its life?
Well, I haven't been following Wrestle One since the beginning. Like I pretty much hopped in on around like 2017 with Oshino coming, when it's come up, like 2016, 2017. I basically jumped in with his title reign, and like what made the promotion special for me is like all the young wrestlers in the promotion. Like I thought they were all showed promise and it was just enjoyable to watch them all grow. And then they did have some interesting storylines too, with one with Oshino and Ike Men's rivalry, which is really what hooked me with the promotion at first. And then the Strong Hearts invasion and stuff like that in 2018. And it's just the only problem, like I think one of the reasons Wrestle One failed in addition to just the money problems is they kind of constantly undercut the young talent. Like for example, like Daiki Inaba, he won the title in 2016, I think, and then immediately dropped it. And then he was injury prone, so you can't really help that, but he won the title back last year. And then after one defense, he lost it right back to an outsider. And Ike Men never got the push he needed because he just never got the big one. Kai, I wasn't watching live, but I know all the disasters that went on with Kai and Wrestle One at the beginning, and it's just they just never were able to capitalize on any stars. Like the only person they really put any effort to as far as the young guys was Oshino, and it worked to an extent. It stabilized him a little bit, but they were never able to make him an even bigger star that he needed to be. But I'm really not selling this one. But all I can say, like the reason I loved Wrestle One so much is because of the young wrestlers, just watching them grow and develop and try and become stars. I think a lot of them are going to do well outside of the company, like Oshino, obviously. I think Sego Tachibana, if a company gives him a shot, I think he'll do well, really well for someone. And then, I don't know. There's just a ton of potential in that group, in that promotion, and I hope some promotions give them some chances. And depending on what this Noah show, we might already know where one guy's going, but he's not exactly a spring chicken, I guess.
So the people who don't know that anything about the history of promotion, it started all the way back in 2013 based on, you know, another All Japan split, basically, which is, you know, seems to be how half the promotions in Japan start now. But yeah, the very first show was September 8th, 2013, the Wrestle One Raising an Army Tour. And this was at the Tokyo Dome City Hall, which is a venue that's very rarely used. It's very close by to Korakuen. It was basically, in a lot of ways, looked at as like a replacement for Korakuen Hall. But the problem is it's like much more expensive than Korakuen. So I just think it never really caught on as like a, well, I mean, there were actually, I'm looking at like a history. There was a time when it was used a lot in like 2010, it looks like.
But, yeah, I really like that venue. Like I watched that original show not too long ago. it's yeah. definitely something to like find, because it's just weird seeing like a lot of the random people they have on it. Like, it has a Mayu Iwatani versus Yoshiko match, and it's like a bunch of like basically Muto just grabbed whoever you could to try and make that first show as big as possible, and then plus yeah. the Wrestle on regulars at the time.
I'm trying to look at what years it was. So 2010, I was looking at the wrong thing. It wasn't used at all in 2010. It looks like IGF used it a lot in like 2011, 2012. New Japan used it for a couple World Tag League dates in 2012. And then Russell One used it for just their first show. Yeah, it looks like it's mostly just IGF that used it, honestly. And then Russell One used it one day again in 2014. IGF in 2015, and then LLPW used it for their anniversary shows, it looks like. And then I think nothing in 2017, LPW again in 2018, like the only ones that use this venue in the last, like, yeah, nothing in 2019. So, you know, I'd say it was, I think, originally supposed, like I said, supposed to be a replacement for Cork, and it just never really caught on, probably because you know, it is much more expensive to run than Cork, and you can definitely hold more people. But I think that when I walked past it, you know, a couple of years ago, I think the thing that was running there was like a Super Sentai like stage show, which I think is like, I think that runs there a lot, like the Super Sentai stage shows. So maybe there's just an issue with dates too. But yeah, I mean, it's like another smaller venue right by the Tokyo Dome. But, you know, you probably walk from that to Corrigan in like 2 minutes. So as far as the very first show, this was main evented by Bob Sapp and Keiji Muto against Rene Dupree and Zodiac. That was your very first main event. being the former... Oh, is that the same? Yeah, it's the same guy that used to be Carlito's bodyguard, I think, right? Jesus Aguilera, was that the guy I'm thinking of?
I think so.
Yeah.
So he just got brought back for Wrestle Carnival for Wrestle 1 too in December.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason.
I'm just checking to make sure it's the same guy I was thinking. Yeah, that is him. Wow. There you go. So I'm surprised I remembered that one. Jesus. But he ended up with like a pretty long run in Japan between, like he was in, it looks like he was in Hustle and Zero One, and then he was in All Japan, and then I guess he was one of the guys that jumped from All Japan to Wrestle One, which is pretty much, you know, like, again, pretty much the entire roster. If you look at the first card, interestingly enough, there were like a few outsiders like Katsuyori Shibata and Kazushi Sakuraba when they were like in their peak as like New Japan outsiders. They worked this show.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, you had guys like Kai and Seiya Sanada, and, you know, all these younger guys I think people had thought of as, you know, the future aces of the promotion. And they of course, you know, Kai would go freelance, and Sanada would go to TNA, and then, you know, I guess go freelance upon coming back to Japan. And, you know, he would end up in New Japan pretty quick after going freelance. It was kind of like he went freelance, he did that strong climb, and then, like, you know, 2 seconds later, he'd be in New Japan. But
yeah, that was another problem with Wrestle 1, is they kept losing talent, especially the young guys like Kai and Sonata. It's like constantly hemorrhaging stuff. By the end of it, it was basically all guys that had been trained in the dojo and not like jump overs with Muto. I think like the only guys that really had left from the original jump was like Kono and Hayashi and Kondo, and I think Andy was part of the original jump. I can't remember.
I'm looking at the first card, and like Daiki and Nava was part of the original jump.
Oh, right, yeah. Because he was in Mexico at the time. Like, I think he flew back and then went back. Like, went back to Japan and then flew back to Mexico or something. Like, he was on excursion, basically, when that split happened, I think.
But yeah, if you look at this card, I mean, they lost a ton of people. I mean, Hiroshi Inaba teamed with Hiroshi Yamato in that opener, and he would go freelance. Ryoto Hama and Nakanoe came over from the jump, and they're both big Japan. Koji Kanemoto, he's pretty much retired now. Minoru Tanaka's in Noah. Kazuyoshi and Shuji Kondo are still there. But yeah, I mean, Stack of Arms, Kono. Well, Kono's still there, but Masakatsu Funaki's not there anymore. So, yeah, like you're saying, like, just lost a ton of guys. And they just became, over the course of the years, they became a promotion that's just, that was all about their dojo. And, you know, they had a unique dojo in the Japanese system where you could, you know, you didn't have to become a Wrestle One wrestler. You could like go, like there was like, I always think of that one guy that wanted to become a 0-1 wrestler that went to the Wrestle One dojo. And there were others that I think would just like start there and then move on to other dojos. But yeah, I mean, it was a, you know, a much more like American school setup, I guess you could say, but that still did end up being like their, really their only source of talent by the end of it. I guess, you know, where Wrestle One fits in, I guess, is another question of like, you know, the its legacy as a Japanese promotion and all that. And I think it's hard to know exactly what the legacy will be right this second, because if you go back and look at, like, here's a great example is, you know, the Toryumon X, which was like a total fucking failure while it was alive, to a much greater degree than Wrestle One ever was. But because the entire roster, you know, moved on and did some pretty big things. I mean, a lot of them, you know, Kagetora went on to have a really long run as a, like, one of the better remembered Dragon Gate big carders. Same for Naoki Tanizaki. And, you know, the guys who didn't move on to Dragon Gate, Taiji Shimoi has had a super long career in NOAH and now New Japan as a junior. And, you know, there's a ton of other wrestlers who went on to really long careers in Michinoku Pro and kind of became the entire Michinoku Pro roster. So, like, so many of those guys just did way bigger things after Toryumon X ended. It probably did more for the legacy of Toryumon X as, like, a, you know, in, like, a positive way. So you have to know, you can't just look at it as, like, what Wrestle One did while it was alive. You know, we have to see what these Wrestle One wrestlers will do, you know, what in the after Wrestle One's gone. You know, like, what will a guy like Ashino go move on and do in Japanese wrestling? What will, like, I mean, there's so many just like talented young wrestlers there that, like, that to me is the big question. It's like, what do these guys do now without Wrestle One? You know, and I think that will depend a lot on what their legacy of the promotion is.
Yeah, I think definitely that, like, where this talent ends up and how big they're able to become is going to be what determines the legacy of the company. Like, you already have guys like Sonata already doing big things, so you have that under your belt. But I think people that aren't even with the company anymore, like Hana, Kimura, and Rei Kosaiki, they both trained in the Wrestle One dojo, and I think both of them have a really bright future ahead of them, especially Hana, just considering her current platform. But even like the guys that are currently there, like Ashino, I think he'll, depending on where he ends up, I think he'll have a, he could definitely do something big, but the only problem with him is his size. So I don't know if promotions like All Japan or New Japan probably wouldn't give him a shot either because he's kind of small too. But I think him, there's like guys like Picasso Luminar and Jun Toncho. They're really young, really early in their careers. Like, I think Picasso just debuted in 2018. So I think depending on where they end up, which I think for some of them, like, for example, as part of this final Wrestle One show, Seki Yoshioka, he was a member of Strong Hearts, but he left the group in that after that show. And I think that kind of only means two things. Either he's going to go to Dragon Gate or he's going to go to New Japan, because those are the only promotions I could really see him being a Strong Hearts member being a problem. And I think he's more on the old side, but I still think he could have a career kind of like Ishimori in New Japan and do some great stuff there. It's just, there's plenty of guys here that have the potential to do stuff. It's just whether a company gives them a shot and whether they take that shot.
Yeah, and you know, Wrestle One, I think, was a really unique promotion when it came to like how long they were able to last before they went under. I mean, you can find lots of examples of Japanese indie promotions that didn't last very long, like some of the more famous like heavyweight ones in the 2000s were like the World Japan, you know, the Riki Choshu company that only lasted from 2003 to 2004, so like from March 2003 to June 2004, and like Big Mouth Loud, which is like another New Japan offshoot, that only lasted from 05 to 06. So, you know, I can't remember the last time a promotion lasted as long as Wrestle One did, only to go under. Like, it's been a long time since you had a promotion last, you know, a good 7 years and before they were finally forced to go under. You know, I think you're probably talking about, like, How long was Hustle around? Let's say I'm doing some live research on the air. I feel like that may have been the last one that like lasted. Yeah, Hustle was almost 6 years. It's like 04 to 2004 to 2010. So, you know, it is interesting, you know, just to see a promotion last that long, but, you know, be unable to keep it going. It's pretty rare in Japanese wrestling. It seems like these companies either, you know, go under after about a year or two, or they just stagger on forever. I mean, you know, 01 is still with us. So, but,
yeah, it seems like Wrestle1 has kind of had a backer that was willing to keep shelling out money, even though they never made a profit, according to the announcement. They were always in the red. So I guess whoever, I forget who was like actually funding it, but I guess whoever it was still willing to pay. And then finally, I guess Kaz and Muto just decided it's not worth it anymore.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see what happens next to all the remaining wrestlers. I guess anything you want to, I mean, if I'm going to tell people to check stuff out from one period that I think is worth revisiting is that Hideki Suzuki title reign. That was pretty, I don't know if you've ever seen any of that, but that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I've seen some of that. I definitely check out Hideki Suzuki's title reign. I check out Shotaro Oshino's title reign, especially the Ikemen match from Pro Wrestling Love in Yokohama 2018, I want to say.
Yeah, that match is awesome.
No, that was 2017, but I think. But yeah, check out his reign. And they actually put a poll out from fans in on their Twitter, and they determined like the top three fan voted best matches in the promotion's history. That match was number one. Number two was Shotaro Oshino versus Manabu Soya from March something 2018 at Korakuen for the title match when Soya won the title, and then a junior title match between Seki Yoshioka and Seki Yoshioka and Yusuke Kodama. All those are great matches, and if you want to check on their YouTube page, they're all up there for free. Before, you had to like go on YouTube and all that to find the some of those matches, but they're all free on YouTube now on their YouTube channel. So if you want to get a taste of what Wrestle1 was about, I'd check that out.
There you go. All right, so that's Wrestle1. You know, hopefully people will check out some of their historical stuff. It's not like there's a lot else to do right now. So definitely something worth checking out. Let's shift over to, I guess, of the two shows we're going to talk about. Let's talk about the NOAH 20th anniversary, NOAH The Chronicle Volume 2. This was back on March 29th. It aired live on DET Universe and Samurai TV from an empty Korakuen Hall. We can start at the top and work our way down, because I think the match everybody's been talking about is the GHC heavyweight title match, Goshi Ozaki defeating Kazuki Fujita in 57-47 with the strong arm lariat for the first defense. You know, this has been a very controversial match, a match that's definitely split people, although I will say I feel like it split people in the exact ways I would have guessed beforehand that it would split people, so nothing really has shocked me about the reaction. It's one of those types of matches, I guess. I really liked it. You know, I do. There were a couple, like I don't have the level of reverence for it, I guess, of the people who won five. But like, to me, it's not like a perfect, like, to me, 5 stars obviously is a perfect wrestling match. I don't think this was a perfect wrestling match, but it was a wrestling match that I really enjoyed. You know, for the most part. And I think, you know, I had a little bit of a hard time star rating it, because that first 35 minutes it's such a unique, like just the two of them just staring at each other. It is a very, very unique way to begin a wrestling match, and like probably one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And I definitely think it's something you have to watch. Like you cannot watch that spoiled. You had to have been watching it live or unspoiled to appreciate it at all. I totally get why someone just, like, once you know what's going to happen, you know, you may as well just skip it. I mean, it's not going to have that kind of impact, but just watching it live and just like experiencing that in the moment, and just like, you know, looking at Twitter and stuff, and like watching people be like, they're fighting so fast that our eyes can't even see it and stuff. Like, that stuff was really fun and really funny. So, you know, it was an experience. I will say, I think it went a little bit too long. I think 35 minutes was a little bit too much for me. And, you know, there was like a moment around the, I think a perfect length would have been like 20 to 25 minutes for that. I think like around the, you know, around the 30 minute mark, it started to be like, okay, I get it. They're staring. Like, let's just move on already. So I did take off a little bit for that maybe, but like, as far as like a really unique way to try something different in an empty arena where you don't have to worry about fans turning on the match because they're staring at each other for 35 minutes straight, I thought it was a really cool thing to do and, you know, a really cool thing to try. And the two of them were absolutely perfect at it. I don't think it was as easy to do that, you know, to do a 35 minute stare down as you might think. And I kept looking at Nosawa on the floor too during that entire stare down. And it was just like, you know, he came up with this when he was like on like a 9 hour bender at Izakaya or whatever, just like just drinking for 9 hours straight. And he must have been like, ah, this is actually working. I can't believe it. So, you know, the biggest flaw I have with the match actually was after the immediate part after the 35 minute stare down, I thought the walk and brawl, or I guess it wasn't immediately after, I guess it was the mat wrestling first. Mat wrestling was fun. I like the mat wrestling. I think, you know, Fujita's good at all that stuff, and they, you know, they really struggling to break the guard and stuff like that. If you're just not into that, you're not going to be into that. But I thought all that stuff was good. But the walk and brawl was my biggest flaw of the match. I didn't really care for the walk and brawl. I mean, other than Fujita drinking the hand sanitizer was great, but the actual walk and brawl I thought just went on for a little too long. It just wasn't anything I was into. But once they got back in the ring, I mean, they just like destroyed each other, and you know, all that stuff was really, really good. You know, all the hard lariats and all that. You know, I saw some people, I think the flagship, they said that they thought the finish was kind of flat. I don't really agree. I thought it was pretty much a perfect finish of Go just finally dropping him with the strong arm lariat and getting the pin. You know, I thought they did a really good job teasing that was going to go the full 60. So the rating I finally like decided on was 4 stars. That was an awesome match. Not a match of the year contender to me, but I totally get why it is for other people. But yeah, I thought it was a really good match, and you know, just some minor flaws that took it down a little bit for me, but nothing that would keep it from being a really good match. What did you think of this controversial? I think I already know actually, but go ahead, TJ. What did you think of this one?
I too kind of had a difficulty star rating it because how weird star ratings are. Like, it just depends on people's criteria and shit like that. But for me right now, it stands as my match of the year. Like, it just depends. Like, it kind of just was weird and different. And like, honestly, like the 31, 35 minutes, whatever, them staring, like it flew by. Like, once you kind of, I wasn't spoiled, thankfully. I saw people saying, it was like just saying something happened in the match, like not something, like something weird happened with the match, and basically to go unspoiled. So I kind of just like got off Discord, Twitter, all that, and just waited until I watched the match. But you're sitting there watching them stare at each other, and then you kind of just start to realize this is really happening. You kind of embrace the absurdity of it, and you just start watching to see if them, like, see when someone's going to move. Like, I thought that was kind of, I got enthralled by watching to see when, if any of them are going to move, and like when they finally did move, it kind of was like, oh fuck, they're actually doing something. And you're just waiting, like, at the way Fujita was standing there, you could have thought he was a statue other than him blinking a few times. And then when he did decide to move, I'm not going to try and like tell you, like, this is all like crazy storytelling and all that. Like, I'm not trying to tell you, oh, this was masterful storytelling of them like staring at each other because waiting to see who's going to move first. But it's just like, I enjoyed watching them just stare at each other for 30 minutes. It's a weird statement to say, but I enjoyed it. And then once they finally got moving, like you said, the mat wrestling was great. I loved the walk and brawl. Like you said, Fujita spitting hand sanitizer in his face and then getting up to the Cork and Hall elevator and trying to go up it, but it wouldn't move. So Fujita just kicked it. And then once they got up on the balcony, Go just being choked out by Fujita over the balcony. And I was kind of with you in thinking like, they probably should have just went to the 60 with how long they went, because I honestly thought they were going to go to the 60 minute once they got that far. But thankfully, I'm kind of happy they didn't though, because Fujita hasn't lost a singles match in like years. And I think having Go be the person to do that, especially for his first title defense, is a great way to get his reign going. And like you said, I love the finish. Like him just, they were going at lariat battle for like the last couple minutes. And then finally that's how it ended. In the same way with the lariat, and I don't know. I just really enjoyed this match. Like, if I had to give it a rating, I'd go 5 stars. But honestly, like, it's just not something I can really rate. It's just an experience. It's not. It's just different than everything else right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very happy to watch it. Like I said, this was like towards the coming off the peak of my illness, and like, I don't want to say that this brought me back to health, but it was a good, very nice distraction from what had been a very rough couple of days. So thank you to these two kings. The semi-main event was the GHC Junior Heavyweight title, Yoshinori Ogawa defeating Daisuke Harada in 26-39 with a foot stomp cutback in his first defense. And this I thought was awesome as well. I went 4 stars on this too. I actually think I like this better than the main event, which, you know, I guess is a bit of a hot take, but they're both very different matches, but very good. And, you know, Ogawa is like one of those guys that, like, I think is just having I don't want to say career revival because he's always been great, but like, he's having more of the spotlight on him, I guess, with this title reign. And he's pretty much knocking out of the park in every single match he has. And I'm very glad he retained here, because I did think, you know, I was pretty worried that Harada was going to win, but this was another really great match.
Yeah, I like this match too a lot. I also went 4 stars. I think we're kind of the low people from what I've seen in some circles, because a lot of people are saying this is the match of the year contender, and I didn't like it to that level. I think a crowd might have helped this a little bit, but I really enjoyed all the arm work that Ogawa was doing on Harada's arm, basically the entire match, and I really enjoyed the finish. Like, just with the roll-up, Harada hitting the double stomp and slipping, and then Ogawa doing the roll-up to get the win, and I'm really excited what's going to happen after the match with Suzuki attacking Ogawa, and then now Stinger's dead. So I'm really excited for an Ogawa-Suzuki title match down the road.
Yeah, and that could be really good.
And I think it's going to be a little awkward once Chris Ridgeway returns to Japan, since Stinger's dead.
Yeah. The match number two, and this would, I think, maybe the big disappointment of the night, Takashi Sugera defeating Minoru Tanaka in 14:35 with an ankle hold to make his fourth defense of the GHC national title. I don't know if they... I was expecting a much more shooty match, I guess is the best way to put it. Like, I thought these two were really going to take it to the mat, and they didn't really do that. They just kind of had a normal wrestling match. You know, it just might have been because they didn't want to overshadow the main event, which was a very... You know, once they finally started wrestling, it wasn't a very, like... you know, shooty slash, like, you know, a lot of mat wrestling, whereas this was, you know, that I was expecting. You know, Sugera and Tanaka definitely both can do that, and they just didn't. So I thought maybe it was to avoid overshadowing the main. But yeah, I mean, this was, you know, a perfectly fine little match. I went like 3.25, but definitely disappointing compared to what I was expecting going in.
I really like this one, actually. Like, I went 4 stars on it. Like, I liked how they wasted no time getting going from the beginning, because with Tanaka, like, doing a moonsault off the top rope to Sugera on the outside, which might have been where he fucked up his ankle. But, yeah, I kind of do agree. Like, it wasn't as shooty as I would have expected between these two, but I did like how stiff they were being with each other. Like at one point, Sugera was kicking, like, the crap out of Tanaka's back, and one of the kicks hit him in the head, and he tried to get back up, like, do all fighting spirit, and then just collapsed anyway once he got kicked in the head again. And I kind of liked Tanaka selling in this. Like, he was dead for, like, the first, like, quarter of the match with how all the punishment he was getting from Sugera, but then suddenly was able to get back up. But I thought he was, like, really pretty much out of the match by then, or early on, but somehow made it back. But I do think the ending was kind of flat to me, but beyond that, I really enjoyed it a lot.
And the opener of this only four-match show was the GHC Junior Heavyweight Tag Team titles, Hayata and Yohei defeating Kotaro Suzuki and Tsuchi Kotoge in 22-34. Hayata used the headache on Kotoge, so they failed in their second defense, and the Rattels team became the 39 champions. This I didn't really, you know, it really picked up towards the end, but it just felt like it dragged forever before that for me. It wasn't really the, you know, 22.5 minutes is a little long for, you know, what Rattel's is capable of, I think. So I gave it 3 stars, you know, gentleman's three. It wasn't a bad match by any stretch, especially by the end, but it definitely dragged a lot for me.
Yeah, I went 3 stars too. Kind of the same complaints you had. Like, it didn't really need to go 22 minutes. And I think Rattels are kind of hurt without a crowd reaction at all. They need a little bit of something to go off of.
They look like WWE guys to me, like playing to nobody a lot.
Well, like, I like Yohei trying to get the crowd into it, like pretend to. Cause it's a little funny the few times. Like, his antics were kind of like the main thing I took away from the match. That and like just Kotoge's offense. I love him. I think he's probably like the best person in the match, and he was pretty much the highlight of it, other than Yohei just being Yohei.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the Noah show. Definitely, if you haven't seen it, I would say definitely worth checking out. Only a 4-match card. You know, you get like a really awesome last two matches, and then TJ obviously liked the national title more than I did, but I would say definitely watch the last two matches at least. And you know, if you already now know that the main event has a 35-minute stare down, you probably don't have to watch all 35 minutes of it. But a lot of the stuff focused on a 35-minute stare down, but I actually think the wrestling, once they started wrestling, was more than good enough to, not even need that, honestly. I mean, I'm glad they did it. I think it was a really interesting thing to do, and it was really cool. But like the match, like if the match was just the actual wrestling the two of them had, I still think it would have been pretty great. So, but yeah, that's Noah. Let's move over to Big Japan and talk about the March 21st Strong Klein Korakuen. It didn't air until March 28th on Samurai, so I took a while to make tape. So it's one of the last shows involving fans from Korakuen that you're going to see for a while. I think the finals are coming up on April 12th, I think are going to have fans, but that's in Sapporo, where they seem to have already gotten past the peak of their outbreak over in Hokkaido. You know, I don't think you're going to see many shows from Tokyo with fans until, you know, like we were talking about earlier, maybe not even until May. As far as the show here, I guess we can again start at the top with the Strong Climb main event, which was Daichi Hashimoto defeating T-Hawk in 1604 at the Rising DDT. I thought this was okay. Daichi had been on kind of a roll for me. I've actually liked a lot of his stuff lately, but this was, I thought he was just like, the Daichi screeching was a little bit too annoying. You know, it just never really grabbed me the way some other matches on the show that we're going to talk about did grab me. So I went 3.25. It was a pretty good match by the end. And, you know, Daichi, other than the screeching, you know, some of his leg selling was pretty good, but it was never a match that I was like super, super into. What do you think of this one?
I'm definitely way higher on this than you are. I went 4.25 on it, but it also helps. I'm a really big T-Hawk fan for anyone that doesn't know. So, like you said, I think Daichi's selling of his leg was pretty much like one of the major highlights of this. T-Hawk was working it over the entire time, and Daichi was pretty much selling it the entire time. Like he was still using his leg and his knee as like for offense, but he'd like immediately like clutch it as soon as he hit a move or he'd limp to T-Hawk after he hit a move. And like near the end, he kind of stopped a little bit, but beyond that, like I just think T-Hawk's like work on Daichi's knee was really good to watch, and I didn't really notice the screaming as much. But part of that, I don't think I had the volume up too high, so maybe I just didn't hear it. But I thought this was probably like one of Daichi's better performances I've seen from him in a while. Like he had the Imamura match, which I really enjoyed from I think it was like night one of Strong Climb, which I really liked, but I think this one was slightly better than that.
I was the only person that liked that match he had with what's his name from the Yokohama show with Sekimoto.
Yeah, well,
I really liked that one.
About to get a rematch of it, so we'll see if you like that one too.
The semi-main, Ryoto Hama defeating Yuji Kobayashi in 9:42 with the Okido Press. This one I thought was really good. A very fun match. They worked a lot faster and a lot harder than you probably think for a Hama match. And Hama just kind of like survived the golden splash and then just came back and eventually got the pin. But you know, for a sub 10-minute match, I thought this was about as good as you're gonna get. Really fast paced, sprint of a match here. I went 3¾. So
I went about 3¼ on it. I thought it was really great too, but I kind of enjoyed Hama's match with Hino from earlier in the tournament a little bit better, but I still thought Hama was like at one of his best here. Like, I really liked when at one point he was like just rolled over Okabayashi as part of his offense. Like, I like a lot of his offense, just him falling on people. And I did, there was one spot where Okabayashi was like going for like a sunset flip over Hama, but he couldn't bring him down, and Hama just tried to sit on him instead. But Okabayashi was able to roll out of the way, but had some cool spots in it, and Hama had his working boots on, so it was a fun match to watch.
Sir from the top, block D, Yuya Aoki defeating Yasufumi Nakanoe in 13:04. They roll up. I have to call that a bit of an upset. This, I thought, again, this was my match of the night, a really hot match with Aoki like just continually surviving Nakanoe's offense before finally getting that pin with the crate out of nowhere. I thought Aoki's selling here was just like really, really good. And Nakanoe looked like $1 million too. And, you know, he's one of those guys that like you just kind of forget how good he is sometimes, because he can go under the radar without really doing much of anything for a long time. But like once when he really puts in a performance, he really puts in a performance. And this was like one of, you know, one of his better performances in a while, I thought. So I went 4 stars on this. I thought it was a really awesome, you know, really fun 13-minute match here.
Yes, I went 4¼ on this, and it's also my match of the night and probably my match of the tournament thus far. I still need to watch the March 20th show, but from what I've seen, this so far is my favorite match of the tournament. Like you said, a lot of this match is just Nakanoe just beating down Aoki, and Aoki trying to survive, and he got a little bit of action in on Nakanoe, but for the most part, he's just getting beat down, and his selling was great, and somehow, despite all of how he was getting bullied the entire match, he was able to pick up the win and in a roll up. I did like the near fall right before that, where Aoki like did like a backslide and then like rolled over. I don't know what that move's called, but it was a really great near fall, and then the actual pinfall was good too. So I really enjoyed this match a lot.
The fourth on top is Izami Kodaka in block B defeating Taishi Takizawa in 11:04 with a leg trap small package. You know, it was all Takizawa early before Izami finally started his comeback, and the finish kind of came out of nowhere, but I liked the way like Izami like kind of turned this cravat into the leg trap small package. You don't really see that kind of transition every day, so that was a really cool way to end the match. So I went 3½. I thought it was a good match.
I went 3 on this. I figured you were gonna enjoy this a little bit more than me, but it was still fun enough, and I really enjoyed the finish, like you said. Like, that was really creative how he Kodaka was able to get the roll up finish for or the cradle pin finish for that.
Yeah. And then the first of the strong climb matches, Akira Hayato defeating Ryuichi Kawakami in 10:53 with a spear. This one was just there for me. I thought it was you know, the shoulder blocks was fine, but then we got to the floor and it was a kind of boring brawl. You know, it didn't really pick up to me until Hayato did the big corner charges. But the finish was exciting, at least with him hitting the two big spears for the pin. The crowd was really into him getting the upset. So that picked up a little bit for me, but I still only went 2¾.
I went 3 on this, and more or less the same as you. It's kind of there for the most of it. And then once Hayato got his momentum going in that final, the two spears were just great. He really hit those well, and Kawakami sold him really good, I guess. But I don't know. I thought Hyoto was definitely like the better wrestler in this match, at least for this match. But it was fun. So yeah, 3 stars.
And then, so that's pretty much it for the show. I mean, there were some tag matches, but really not much to talk about there, other than the deathmatch crocodile in the the dark fluorescent light tubes deathmatch. Like, what the hell was that thing?
Oh, it was like a alligator toy with a gusset board duct taped to it, and then they were like trying to like stomping each other with it and like using it on their hand, like putting people's hands in it, just chomping on it. Like, that was really the highlight of that whole thing. That was incredible.
Yeah.
Like, they've gotten really creative with their deathmatch tools lately. Like, I think they used a paper shredder last month as a weapon.
Yeah, it's something. But all right, so that's pretty much almost, we're almost at the end of the strong climb. They're going to try to, like I said earlier, run these two shows in Sapporo, which as of now are on April 12th. They're going to air on Samurai. I'm not sure if they're airing live or not. Let me look that up right now, actually. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the two semifinals are Jake Lee from All Japan against Quiet Storm. And like you just mentioned earlier, a rematch from Yokohama with Daichi Hashimoto against Daisuke Sekimoto. And then the two winners obviously meet in the final on the, you know, the second show of two that day. So we'll see if those shows do go through, I guess. I assume they are as of now, but, you know, things are definitely, you know, a little kind of all over the place right now. So the Big Japan show, okay, it looks like it airs a week later. So it looks like they're going to air together on April 19th. So there you go. You know, the first couple weeks of April definitely looking a little bit light right now, but you know, there isn't a lot going on. And I think you mentioned earlier that Ota War Gym is just taking out of service for April 1st to 30th. So there won't be any shows during that month. But yeah, I don't know. I think people had better strap in for a light April, which I think when I talk about our plans for this podcast at the end, I think, you know, we're definitely strapped in for late April here. You know, I think that's what we're the only thing that's going to be running, it looks like, are these DDT and NOAH, no fan shows. So, what do you plan to do to get through a late April, TJ? You're going to watch a lot more historical stuff?
I'll probably watch pretty much everything that airs. I still have a little bit of a backlog, and plus, I just haven't been watching stuff because I've been playing a lot of video games, like way more than I have been in a long time. But pretty much whatever makes tape on Nika, I'll watch that. But once that dries up, I'll be jumping into a lot more historical stuff. I've kind of been doing that already a little bit, like trying to space it out so I don't completely dry up my backlog super quickly. But yeah, there's plenty of stuff I haven't watched, so I'll have something to do.
But so it looks like if people are expecting Japan to get back to normal, including with like New Japan shows and stuff, I just don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Maybe by May, you know, maybe I think you're looking at like, realistically, I think you're looking at like late May, much more than anything else. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess. I mean, things are not great in America or in Japan right now. I think things are probably much worse in America right now, honestly. But, you know, Japan, they're taking it. It feels like they're finally taking it seriously with, as we start seeing like 100 plus cases in Tokyo per day, which for the first time ever, I think, actually. So, and, you know, they don't have the Olympics to worry about anymore. So, you know, I think you're just going to see if the rumor is that the prime minister is going to declare a state of emergency on Monday, Japan time. So, which we should know that, I guess, pretty soon after I finish recording here. But yeah, it is you know, it's a very not great time right now, pretty much for anybody. So, you know, I don't think we're going to have a lot of Japanese wrestling to distract us from, or at least not in front of crowds, distract us from what's been going on. Apparently, AEW is like shut down too. I don't know if you heard that.
Yeah, they have some stuff taped, like that TNT championship tournament and all that kind of crap. But yeah, they're basically done indefinitely. And WWE's probably going to be done that too, because they've only taped up till this Raw tomorrow. So I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah. I mean, WWE at least has like that really huge tape library. Honestly, they could just put whatever they want on the air. But AEW obviously does not have that. So I don't know what they're going to put on TNT every week. You know, maybe it'll, after this TNT tournament stuff runs out, who knows what they're going to be putting up there. But it's you know, like I said, a weird period. If I sound down probably, and I am pretty down about, you know, just like thinking about every, you know, just trying to like think about what we're going to see in the future, and you know, what it's just very, very uncertain times right now. And, you know, nobody can tell you when, if anyone claims they know when we're going to be back to normal, I think they're probably lying to you. Basically, I think we're in a really bad situation that's not going to come to an end anytime soon. So on that positive note, I guess, TJ, we can wrap things up. You want to start plug your new podcast and all that, or not new, but your recent podcast, I guess.
Yeah. On the last podcast, I don't even remember what we talked about the last podcast. Let me even look that up real quick.
Okay. I guess I have to fill some air here.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, the last podcast, we talked about the last Wrestle 1 Chikiba show, which took place on March 25th. The Old Japan Korakuen from March 23rd, the DDT show from March 22nd, and then the Noah Korakuen that we just talked about. And then next week, which we'll be recording on Tuesday, we're going to talk the DDT show from yesterday, the start of Noah's Global Tag League, which I'm surprised they're happening, but... And
they're doing that empty arena.
Yeah, it started today, but I haven't gotten a chance to watch it yet. Yeah. But and then we're also going to talk about year-end front runners, which you can kind of talk about now since nothing's really been happening. But basically, see who we think's been the top people. So top people matches, all that from the first 3 months of the year, but. It's the One Wrestling Podcast, which you can follow at One Wrestling Pod. And on another little plug, check out the Wrestle One Final Korakuen if you feel like watching another empty arena show. I get why you might not, but it'll air on Gaora on the 17th of this month. So check that out if you're interested.
So there you go. Thanks for that plug. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Wrestle Omakase, Wrestling Would Not Fit. So as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be doing a little bit of a different format going forward because I'd be honest, I'm a little bit tired of talking about these depressing empty arena shows. So I don't know how many we're going to talk about, but we're going to transition a little bit to more historical content for at least the next few weeks while there isn't much going on inside or outside of Japan. So we're going to do what I'm calling a five matches with blank format where I'm going to have on a guest. The guest and I will each pick two matches that we'll for sure watch, so that's four of the five. And then the fifth match we'll each pick a third bonus match, and then I'll put it on a Twitter poll. So you, the listeners, will get to decide during the course of the week what the fifth match we'll talk about is. So you'll pick between my pick and the guest pick. So that sounds confusing. All you're doing is picking between two matches, and that'll be the fifth match we talk about. So the first guest for next week's show will be Joe Lanza from the Voice of Wrestling flagship. So that'll be exciting. Joe and I will, like I said, each pick two matches for each other to watch, and we'll see who gets the fifth match chosen by the Wrestling Omakase listeners. So definitely check out the at Wrestling Omakase account for that poll to go up. I'll probably go up Monday or Tuesday, and then you'll get to pick the fifth match that we talk about on next week's show. And, you know, this format, I'm not sure how long it'll last. It depends on, you know, how long, I guess, the coronavirus stuff lasts and how many shows start coming out of at least Japan again, since Japan's what we're primarily worried about here. But for these guest episodes, you know, you can pick anything. It won't just be Japanese wrestling. So, But yeah, we'll definitely see how that format goes. It might be a little bit of a work in progress, but it's just kind of my idea for how we can, you know, do something a little bit different while we're in the middle of this coronavirus pandemic. So definitely check that out next week with me and Joe. And in the meantime, folks, thank you as always for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save